What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, April 25th, 2023. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I am joined by Fran Mirabella III.
Happy to be back. How's it going?
Happy to have you back. Did the smoke scare you?
Yeah, I always think the Undertaker's about to come out.
Exactly.
Which is, I know
you're wearing
what you
the
guys
purple.
Want.
You're wearing the Undertaker, the classic 90s like, Taker look. Yeah.
There we go. Maybe he's going to show up and rip it off of me.
How you doing, Fran? It's been a while.
Doing well, yeah. I think the last time I was here, actually, it's only been a month or two, so not too shabby.
Good back. Getting you back here. What you been up to? Anything new?
Nothing too exciting. I did get back into the Destiny grind because that came out. Might have been just around when I was here last time, but I went full in. I usually do that about once a year.
Yeah.
Now I'm just done. Ground out for like the year, basically.
So where are you at with Destiny then? So you're grinded out for the year. You're done. Where are we at with Destiny now that this big expansion came out? Like, are you expecting another one in the next year?
Oh, yeah. There's always their cycle now is one expansion per year. They slipped from September to February, so you always get an expansion in February, and then it's four pieces of seasonal content. One launches with that expansion, but so it's every quarter. February, then May, the end of May, there's one. And so I always play the seasonal content. It's pretty light. It's like usually $10, you know, vibe, if that makes sense. But I keep up with it, but this is where I usually go, like, big if I'm gonna go big at all.
Yeah, the big yearly one. Do you think there's going to be a Destiny 3 or something that is like an even bigger drop than the annualized drops?
It's funny, I'm only laughing because I responded to like a Destiny podcast about, they were like, the engine's too old, we need a Destiny 3, roughly speaking, that's what they said. And a lot of chatter all of a sudden has been, I guess it's been on everybody's mind, but it's because it's 9 years later in Destiny. Everybody's feeling like it's the same. And what I said is, I'm like, it's not the engine. And of course, there's a billion reasons why your engine should always continue to improve. And it has, by the way, at Bungie. But everybody wants Unreal Engine 5 now, of course. And, you know, the point is, people are very quick to say, we need a new engine. But games don't just happen as quickly as I think people, you know, think. Like, we're going to talk about Star Wars Jedi a little bit today, right? Like, it took longer than I expected, and we'll see. It's probably, my guess is, it looks similar, but it's a lot more content. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to see the same thing with Tears of the Kingdom. Like, think of how long that's taken. You can't just replace an engine and hope to get all of that. So, anyway, to answer the question, next year is the final shape, which is the end of their sort of Star Wars. It was going to be a trilogy, and then it's a, what do they call it when it's a quad? But anyway, it's a quad saga.
Quad trilogy, I guess.
They had templates.
Yeah, they had
that's
to.
Five.
They had to actually slip in one more release to get to what's called the final shape next year. And that's supposed to end this light and dark saga, as they call it.
Okay.
And then we don't know what's next, but I think people want to believe there's a Destiny 3, and Bungie's been saying no, it's not. They've even said about the engine, by the way, like, we've been continually improving it. You shouldn't be expecting a new engine, but the point is, I expect them to do a little bigger of a like new start. So expect some things maybe to go away and some newer things to show up, maybe a new part of the universe because it is set around sort of Earth and the planets we know. But I do not expect it to be like, well, we're going to blow everything up again and it's Destiny 3. Like, no,
yeah.
I wouldn't expect that at all. But that wouldn't be until like 2025 we're talking.
I mean, do you think that the PlayStation Studios ownership of Bungie will affect Destiny 3 one way or another?
If there's a Destiny 3 in the title, I mean, it's going to affect them in Sony's philosophies. But what I like about that is Sony, with most of these types of partners, whether it's Sucker Punch or, I mean, they like to do big cinematic. And this is their one, like, really, I mean, it is the online service game. So it will be interesting to see how Sony influences that, because Bungie already has this rhythm and they're going to continue to release it for Xbox and all this other stuff. But I think, if anything, it's just more polish. Keep doing what you're doing and hopefully get some more resources to kind of plug some of these gaps. The biggest problem with Destiny is it's been 9 years, and if you've been playing it off and on or the whole time, it's just too samey. It is a very high polished game, and I'd like to see other studios do this well. And I put that out there because a lot of people are like, meh, Lightfall story was like, meh, and it gets that sort of like middling 6 and 7 kind of vibe. But, like, the polish of the game is still all there. And, like, you know, you talk to Andy and other, Joey was addicted. And
oh, yeah.
It's quality. It's just, it's the same roughly every year.
Yeah.
So yeah. They got to break that cycle. Whether they do it with Final Shape next year, we'll see. Otherwise, I do expect them to break the cycle a little more with whatever's in 2025.
You know, it's the same every day, Fran. The fact that you can get your news live right here on Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday, 10 a.m., twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We come at you live with all of the video game news that you need to know. If you can't watch live, that's totally okay. You can watch later on YouTube or roosterteeth.com. You can also listen on podcast services by searching your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Games Daily, and we will be right there for you. If you're feeling extra frisky today, give us some thumbs up. Give us the 5 stars. Give us the 10 out of 10 reviews. All the good stuff. It really helps us get into the algorithm so that new people can find us and we can continue making fun stuff happen. You know all about that algorithm.
I love that,
Fran.
You tell him to get into the algorithm, and he's right.
Yes.
Watch a next video after you watch this one. That's part of the Kind of Funny ecosystem.
And if you want to be even more a part of the Kind of Funny ecosystem, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to be, because you get the show ad-free. You also get so much bonus content, Kind of Feudy, the shit list, Greg Ways, so much amazing content. Remember Blank. It's just great. Endless quality content for you to consume. To be part of the show, head to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in with your questions, squad ups, and more. Some housekeeping for you. A new Kind of Funny podcast is up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunny. It is one of those ones that is just an all-timer, friend. Lots of great jokes. I was laughing the entire time. Nick says some extremely ridiculous things. Maybe later in the show, me and you will have to talk about your thoughts on the Creator Clash matchup of Fran Mirabella versus Nick Scarpino in a boxing match.
Yes, that did come up.
And then before Jedi Survivor reviews go up, you should check out Barrett's absolutely amazing video essay about why Jedi Fallen Order is incredible. He fucking kicked ass on this thing. It is 30 minutes-ish. I don't remember the exact time, but it's about 30 minutes of an extremely high-quality breakdown of what makes Jedi Fallen Order special. And it's also a great refresher on what that game was and why it mattered leading into Jedi Survivor. So definitely go check that out. And then remember, we're trying something new after Games Daily. Before the daily streams, we're doing a nice little Games Daily post show where we are going to hang out with you, with Snowbike Mike, and we'll answer all of your YouTube super chats about the stories from the show or whatever video game stuff you'd like to talk about. Over on Patreon, there's a new episode of Greg Way up every single day. This week, Greg is out, so that means Snowbike Mike is taking him up, and you always want a little bit more Mike in your life. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus and Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Rocket Money, but we'll tell you all about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 5 stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Story number one, a PSA for you, everybody. Star Wars Jedi Survivor spoilers have leaked online. This comes from Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Be careful out there.
We're not spoiling
mute
it.
Stuff. Of course we're not spoiling it. Don't spoil it for anybody else out there. Be
jerk
cool.
Faces.
The highly anticipated Star Wars Jedi Survivor from EA's Respawn Entertainment isn't out for another few days. We're just days away, Frank.
I know.
That's very exciting. But heads up, spoilers have already leaked online. The leaker, who appears to have been sold a copy of the game a few days early, has already completed Jedi Survivor and took to Twitter to share their impressions, screenshots, and other details. These have also been shared on Reset Era, which we won't be linking to, so reader beware. The leak, which includes details about the ending, game length, the number of planets, new characters, and lots more, even grabbed the attention of EA itself, as its Star Wars account tweeted, "No spoilers." Barrett brought up that tweet for you to see there, where they just say, "No spoilers. We're beyond excited for everyone to experience Jedi Survivor this week. We ask that you please be mindful of others and avoid posting or sharing spoilers. And remember, BD is watching." What do you think, Fran?
You know, I'm wondering how much you mentioned a lot of stuff like, oh, number of planets, and some of this stuff will probably come out in the reviews, which is tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Is that right?
It is.
Which you can watch right here.
Check out ours for sure. youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. It'll be on the Gamescast. It's going to be a great one. I mean, I guess we could say this, that like who's going to be on it, right, Barrett? You want to let people know?
I've got food in my mouth. You tell
Barrett,
me.
He had a thumbs
mouth,
up,
but it's
going to
be Greg Miller as our lead reviewer on this one. I'll be hosting it. We have Andy, we have Bless, and Barrett Courtney will be joining us. So we have a full squad of people to talk
Sounds
about
like
Jedi Survivor. Really, really excited about it.
But yeah, I'm curious to see how much comes out in just the normal review discussion, of course, with planets. And But story stuff is always like, just don't do that. Like, especially if you got the game early, don't be that person is all. I mean,
yeah.
Because even if you were like, hey, spoilers beware, and you have this tweet thread, the problem is it will get spread around. People will use that divisively, and that's the problem. Some people don't even play these games. They love to find out this crap and go in streams and other and just make people's life, you know, awful.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. So don't make people's lives awful. That, of course,
that's
don't
my
do
message
any of that.
For today.
You know, I do think that, like, that we are in this, like, modern era of social media and just media in general, where more and more, I think, we're seeing the creators themselves put out messaging of, like, hey, protect this experience for people, and, like, come on, like, be cool. Which, like, it's sad that that's where we're at, but also it makes sense. Like, things have evolved in just the way people communicate. Like, this type of messaging, I do think, goes a long way, but also, like take heed to it. Like, I feel like this, like, the fact that the people that have worked so hard in this game have to put out this messaging because there was a leak, not to get ahead of it, it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I am, some of you know this, some of you don't, but I am a very protective type person when it comes to spoilers, so much that, like, I don't care how far back in time it goes, just ask first, oh, wait, is this a spoiler for you? Don't assume. And some people are like, Fran, that is ridiculous. If you haven't watched Avengers Endgame, that's on you. And they get into this, like, that's on you, bro. And I'm like, why? Like, I mean, I have, by the way, but I bring this up, Tim, because you may or may not remember this story when we were doing Fireteam Chat way back in the day. Sean Finney. In the middle of the show, like, we're talking about Destiny. I don't know how it got into Marvel, and I won't spoil it, just in case. But he threw out, like, one of the major deaths in Endgame. He's like, oh, well, so-and-so died. And I was like, and you see my face live on the show. And he's like, oops. And I was just, I was so pissed, though. Because they ruined, the point is, you ruined the movie for me. Couldn't you have just asked or been careful?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. You can always be more careful. I do think it's context sensitive. And we get a lot of shit for spoiling stuff on shows. And some of it, people, I totally understand. Yeah. Totally understand. And everyone has their different things. And that's totally fair. I personally, my stance on it is, try not to ruin experiences for people. And, like, you're not always going to get that right.
You take something away from them.
Yeah, totally. And I don't want to do that. Like, I love sharing things with people. I love, like, seeing people experience stuff for the first time and all that. So, like, I am the number one fan of, like, the experience. But especially when people don't – for me, it's when people don't have the opportunity to have the experience. Like, right here, it's like people that want to not be spoiled can't play this game if they want to right now. So I feel like it's, like, extra, extra, extra sensitive. I think as things go on, the sensitivity kind of drops down
definitely,
a bit. But
definitely.
But yeah, where are you at with the Survivor? Are you itching for it, Fran?
I am. I'm just so far back in the backlog now. I guess I feel defeated. But yes, I loved Star Wars Jedi when it came out. Fallen Order, right?
Yep.
This is just Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved it. I was super into it, sort of... I don't know. It was like, to me, it was almost a Metroid-ish, Tomb Raider-ish, with a touch of Sekiro kind of Star Wars adventure. And so I loved a lot about it, other than some of the backtracking and whatnot. But even that was fine by me, you know, especially for
a Metroid guy
out the gate. Yeah. And they fixed some of those, I believe, fast travel points later. So anyway, I was curious to see what they do here. I'm always in these games about the feel. I mean, every high-polished game, it's about the feel of the saber and your moves, and, of course, the skill trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it's going to come down to for me. And, like, I have some memorable boss fights in Fallen Order and obvious, like, moments where I was like, oh, man, that was, like, the lightsaber battle that I wanted, and it felt really good. And so can they continue that pace of, like, oh, and it feels even better now? Well, we'll see. Either way, I know it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. So you say you have a big backlog. Is this going to jump to the front of it? Or okay. So like this when this game comes out this week, boom, Fran Mirabella, twitch.tv/FM3.
Yes, I'm definitely playing it. What I hesitate on is, can I continue to play? It's probably a good, for me, it's probably going to be a 40-hour type game. Probably, at least. So that's what I wonder. Like, am I going to, because Zelda comes out.
May 12th, I want to say.
It was like right
we're
around
two
the
weeks away.
So I was like, that's man. Like, if I don't finish it before Zelda, I'm screwed. But yeah, no, it's the priority. I'm super excited. And yeah, I don't want any spoilers on this one either.
Yeah, FM3 underscore. My bad. Twitch.tv/FM3.
I hate the underscore, obviously. If you search FM3, though, on Twitch, you can find it. It's pretty easy.
Lean into the underscore, Fran. Lean into
No.
So we're here, Fran. We are a week away from, or within the week of Jedi Survivor. Within. Oh my God! Within 2 weeks, of Zelda, what's your Zelda hype levels? You're one of the bigger Zelda guys I know as well.
Yeah, I'm super excited for Zelda. It's the same sort of like slight hyperventilation on like, I want to. It's weird too that I'm now playing games like as my main thing, right? But it's hard to find that rhythm of keeping Twitch moving at the right speed, right? So I've been playing a lot of Destiny because that got a lot of response, obviously. Where people have dropped in and out. So frankly, that was part of it too. I played a ton of Destiny because it was a good time to do it, but also I sort of has been like a good spot on late night Twitch for that. So that's been good, but it's starting to stretch for everybody. Like we're through all the content. So anyway, long story short, yeah, just looking at the footage, yeah. I'm like, yeah.
And
the last thing I would say is I regret because I was still changing from leaving IGN doing all sorts of things at the time when Breath of the Wild hit, I believe. And I regret not going super deep. Like with Elden Ring, I went 300 hours. And so I could see myself doing something like that with this game. So
with Breath of the Wild, then what did you do? You beat it.
I just beat it.
Yeah, okay.
And tons of like the deeper sides I didn't do.
I mean, it's a lot of Korok seeds, you know.
Yeah, okay, I'm not going to do the Korok seeds. That I care way less about. What's up, Kevin? I care way less about.
But you're trying, like you're hoping to get to shrines and stuff like that.
Yeah, do all the shrines. Also just different builds, but also fight the what are the bigger centaur type?
Oh, the Lynels.
Yeah, the Lynels. I didn't do. There was like multiple Lynels to fight and stuff,
they're
right?
So scary.
I know, and like I wanted to like master that, but I never did, and so I definitely regret some of that.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Like this trailer, I think, is like so special because. Like, I know to a lot of people, they look at this and like, oh, what? I don't see what's the big deal. But like, to people that love Breath of the Wild and that love Nintendo and that love Zelda, seeing this trailer, it's like, whoa. I feel like every single bit about it, like, you can feel the magic. Like, you kind of just understand exactly what the experience is going to be from what they're given here. But there's also that mystery. There's also that X factor. But that first shot of Link, like, jumping down, like, falling from the sky and the camera going around him.
Yeah.
You're immediately like, I get it. I'm in.
And all these shots of, and this is what I love about Nintendo and their sort of imagination of like all of these shots where you see stuff floating in the air above a world you've already kind of explored and like all of the new building and physics stuff. It's super exciting. I mean, I think we're going to see some truly like crazy clips that are coming out of this like people building like look at this stuff. It's absolutely insane looking. And that's why, man, I think if you get into this game, it 300 to 500 hours, even easy. Like seriously, like if you're like crazy about it.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah. Exciting stuff, everybody. Be careful out there with spoilers for Jedi, and then I'm sure with Zelda. I mean, already with Zelda, there was the art book that leaked back in January, I think. So be careful out there. Remember to mute hashtags and like do all the things you need to do to protect yourself, because there's going to be a lot of bad people out there that aren't trying to protect your good time. Story number two, Sega of America cohort moves to unionize. This is from Jeffrey Rousseau at gamesindustry.biz. A unit of 144 staffers at Sega of America have filed for a union election with the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, for those in the know. As reported by The Verge, the cohort known as the Allied Employees Guild Improving Sega, AEGIS, consists of employees from departments that include live service, marketing, and product development. The unit's partnered with the Communications Workers of America. In its statement regarding the unionization effort, the group said in part, "Our workers and our audiences deserve games made by people who make a living wage. In our quest to reclaim our collective power, we've built bridges with fellow workers from across our company in an effort to understand our shared issues." The unit also said that nearly a third of Sega staff aren't full-time workers, lack paid time off, and do not have access to bereavement leave. The cohort's goals in forming a union include higher base pay for all staffers, improved stable benefits for all staffers, clear outlines for career advancement, balanced workloads and schedules, adequate staffing to end overwork. This follows, of course, on a trend in the industry of many other on every side of the games industry, kind of unionizing in different ways to kind of get the needs met of just treating people right. I feel like that's the thing is with all this. It's like just people just need to be treated right. And the bigger the companies, I feel like this has just become more and more of an issue. And the thing that really like I see here is like the nearly a third of Sega staff aren't full-time workers. It's like, if they are full-time workers, like doing full-time work, but they're contractors. Like, this shit just needs to stop, man. Like, people are just being so abused by all of this. And industries all over, but like, especially in games, it's like the standard. And to see some change against that happening and more, I don't even want to say slowly, it's starting to happen kind of quickly, I think it's a great thing to see.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think financially, things are just getting a lot tighter as well over the years since the pandemic. And it's starting to show even more and more the work from home culture too, of like people realizing like, wait, like where have I wasted time with things? And, you know, all of that meaning coming together and people realizing like, yeah, like if you're not at the top of some of these companies, like it can be very average or just bad, right? And like, what I'm leading to with this is it's been so many just decades and decades of like capitalism and all of the above of like, well, that's just how the businesses are built and what the investors expect. But like these people at the top that have 5-bedroom homes, they're complacent that they're like, well, yeah, I have a 5-bedroom home because that's my job at my level. And sorry if you can barely make the rent and get food. Like that's where it breaks down, right? You got a 30-year staff that's just like, they're doing okay while you're super profiting. Maybe time to balance things out a little bit.
Yeah, it's all about the balance. It's all, again, to me, it's all about treating people right. As long as people are being treated well for like what they are doing and the expectations are being met, things are being asked, things are being done, things are being rewarded. And those all just kind of need to be equal across the board, I think. And we're seeing more and more of that. And again, as more and more acquisitions are happening in the space, I mean, Sega itself, like we were talking about acquisition stories last week with them acquiring Rovio. Right? Mm-hmm. That's going to create another issues, right? Yeah. Power dynamics and everything. And like more layoffs are essentially guaranteed at this point as they continue to roll out everywhere. So hopefully this ends up working out for them and creating a better workplace for the people at Sega. And then hopefully this makes sense for other places as well.
Yep.
Story number three, everybody. Asus.
I honestly don't know. I say both.
Asus Raj Ali launches on May 11th and is going to be under $1,000. This comes from Katie Wickens at PC Gamer. The Asus Raj, is it the Raj?
It's actually Republic of Gamers is what it stands for. So it's probably ROG.
No, it's not.
But it's Republic
it's
of
really?
Gamers.
Really?
Yeah. That's their sub brand. Asus. See, I say Asus, and then Republic of Gamers is their, like, I think it's their higher-end gaming stuff. Like, I have a number of Asus. That help?
Oh, it's Republic of Gamers, man. There's something about that that really rubs me
the wrong
way.
I better double-check. Wait, am I going to get a
That's
correction?
That's a weird vibe. But also, like, when this comes out,
no,
can
it is
someone
Republic
make a custom skin with Roger's face all over it?
Yes.
Oh, love that. Love that. The Asus Republic of Gamers ally.
Yeah, there you go.
The ally
there you
makes
go.
It even weirder. Has an official launch date of May 11th. It's Alfredo's birthday. That's a lot sooner than many of us expected to see the new Steam Deck rival, a Wii PC that Asus is promising will redefine handheld gaming. The company's been seeding us with some solid data ready for its upcoming launch event, including the super bright 120Hz 7-inch screen's response time and the machine's confirmed pair of AMD Ryzen Z1 series chips. Asus is also promising 3 months of Game Pass Ultimate with each purchase, giving users instant access to hundreds of AAA and indie titles the moment they boot their ally. That's really, really smart and an awesome move. That's a pretty neat way to get people up and running quickly and to get around the potential limitations of handheld hardware, noise, and battery life. There's been no admission on what sort of battery life we should be able to expect out of the Raj ally. However, and also no real hints at the final price. The closest we got was an Asus representative assuring us that while the retail price was being held back for a reveal at the May 11th launch event, I can tell you for sure that the price will be below $1,000. So expect $999.99.
Yeah.
And then Tom Warren has a tweet here saying Microsoft's head of Xbox devices will be part of the Asus Raj Ali handhelds launch on May 11th. I doubt it's much more than the usual partner stuff, but I sure hope Microsoft Series considering tailoring its Windows UI for Steam Deck competitors.
I wonder how it feels to hold, you know, that's always the
big. That is the big one, man. And I feel like as these things, we've seen a couple now, these the Steam Deck competitors come out, Logitech had its, seeing this one come out, I feel like this is going to be a bit more on the beefier side, kind of trying to actually compete a little bit more head-to-head on the tech front.
Yeah.
Are you a Steam Deck? Do you have one?
No, I don't. I would
love
one.
Do you have any interest in one?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's holding you back?
The money. Yeah, I'm just not going to spend the money on that, like, versus everything else. But I also don't travel as much, and I don't, like, lay in bed and play games. And so, like, my use case is a lot lower on it, too. But back when I traveled a lot more and was always on the road or headed here, et cetera, having one, like, I always used to carry my Switch around, right? So
yeah,
that's what I was going to ask is, like, how does this, you know, stack up in the world of Steam Decks, the Republic of Gamers ally from Asus, maybe if PlayStation's working on something. I mean, do you see that Switch spurned all of this? I'm kind of curious. Do you think Steam Deck would have happened and this would have happened regardless?
I think it's one of those things where, like, hindsight's 20/20, and I don't think necessarily that it's, like, just because of the Switch, but I do think that the Switch opened a market differently and, like, changed the way we understand handheld gaming, or portable gaming is probably a better way to put it at this point.
Yeah.
Because I feel like some of the charm of the Steam Deck is the ability to plug it into a TV, you know, and
right.
just take it with you and have, like, just like a mobile desktop, essentially, that's not a laptop, that is more gaming focused, built around delivering that experience. But I think that there's just I've said this a million times, this console generation, but I feel like this is the first gen where Xbox, Sony, and Nintendo are all kind of doing their own things. They have their own priorities and their own kind of voice and vision in terms of what you expect, whether it's Nintendo doing the actual Switch thing of they no longer have the 3DS and console. It's just one thing that they're providing games for, and they're the Nintendo experiences we expect. PlayStation continuing to define those, like, quadruple, five quintuple A, you know, like, blockbuster experiences we expect. And then Xbox with the Game Pass kind of methodology of, like, it's going to be about quantity. It's going to be the subscription. We're going to focus on from indies to AAA of just kind of giving you a lot of things over time. Then you have the PC side of things.
Trying to describe the Xbox strategy as we wait. But you're right.
But it is. And it's successful there for
also,
that reason.
Once we have things like Starfield, hopefully, is a banger. And I'm not disagreeing with it. It's just funny to hear, like, oh man, PlayStation quintuple, because they have it on lockdown. Stuff's already out the door. We know where Nintendo's been at for many, many years. I won't get into it. And then Xbox is like, well, they got this subscription and lots of stuff
will
on
fall
there.
One day.
The dominoes. The dominoes.
Just kidding. I like Xbox Game Pass for the record. I've defended stuff like Halo Infinite, which is going to come around. But anyway. It's off track.
Yeah, no, it's not off track. I mean, look,
it's funny to hear you describe them all back to back.
Yeah, but I think at least in terms of vision and in terms of, like, their priorities and the proof's in the pudding, what they have done. So I'm not just, like, talking out of my ass. Like,
no.
This is what they have done and what they're continuing to do so far. But the PC side of things, I think, is very interesting because generation as well, I think PC has defined itself as, like, the biggest increase in the pie chart of gamers that it's ever been. Like, I feel like the PC is now a tenant of the of video games in a way that it used to be more of a niche thing, where it was PC gamers played Counter-Strike or they played Warcraft or they played whatever. Now PC gamers are playing the same games we're playing on console.
Yes. Yeah. And at large, like you're saying. I mean, PC gaming has become very cool. Don't listen to Greg Miller. It is absolutely awesome, and it always looks a lot better than your PlayStation 5s, okay? Much as I love the PlayStation 5.
It looks gorgeous, but it runs at 5 frames a second. You know what I'm saying, Tim?
I know what you're
saying,
baby.
The PlayStation 5? But yeah, like, it is part of the Xbox strategy, though. You forget the Windows side, the PC side, Xbox, you know, Game Pass PC, et cetera. But for those asking, yeah, the ROG Ally runs on Windows. I was just looking that up. According to The Verge hands-on here that they published, I was trying to see if it was an OLED screen. I didn't quite find that, but
I doubt it.
It's going to be expensive. It's going to run Windows. Will the battery hold up for long enough to make it worth your while, however you're traveling with it? I mean, most people, right, it's going to be on the bus, in a car, on a plane, or at school or work.
I'd be really interested in this. Like, this is what we were talking about earlier with the handheld versus portable. Like, the weird little nomenclature that comes with this, where I am very interested in the average use cases of the Steam Deck and of those type of products. Because I think that the Switch, there is that, because of how Nintendo games are designed and because of the user base that it has, I would be willing to bet that It's a pretty balanced thing between people that play docked, people that play undocked, people that exclusively have their Switch at home, or people that bring their Switch with them places.
Yeah.
With the Steam Deck, I get the vibe that, yes, there are the enthusiasts that travel and take it with them and all of that, but I see it more as a convenient way to be able to play your games like in different rooms of your house as opposed to taking it with you. Which I know doesn't sound like that big of a difference, but I do think that changes the expectations and requirements for the battery life.
Yes. Yeah, no, you make a good point. Like, I skipped that. That's a big one. People just sitting around, like, with their families and friends, and, like, they might just be playing Switch while somebody watches TV. The whole, like, original, like, commercial that they did that we at first were like, huh, that's interesting, like, is legit. And people get, all the time I see people do, I'm like, why don't you just plug it in? They're like, I'm good. And I'm like, but you, like, they might even have a TV and a dock available, but they're good.
Yeah.
And it's a totally different way to play. Switch
games might look better handheld because than on a big-ass 4K TV.
Well, yeah, but that's a different conversation. Looks a lot better. Don't even get me started. We don't have a 1080p Zelda still in 2023. I mean, I don't have the data on the new one, but I guarantee you, it's not going to be native 1080p.
Am I going to be a nasty little boy and still play it on my big 4K OLED?
You should.
Like a little fuck? Yeah, I am.
The good news is it will look good because of Nintendo's good at handling their style.
It's a little smushy.
You know, 849p or whatever it ends up at. But anyway, I got off track on that one. What was I even saying?
No, we're talking about like kind of like where the Raj Alley kind of fits into all of this. Yeah, and I feel like it makes sense that there's going to be a lot of these. And I think that from what I know of the Republic of Gamers stuff, it's like they do phones as well, and like they represent a niche of a niche where it's like they are kind of the more like, we're the fucking gamers. Things are going to have LED lights everywhere. This thing's going to have fucking raw power, man. And I feel like Steam Deck is a bit more like, yo, we're trying to make things verified. And like we use Steam and all this. This being Windows, I think it represents the more PC enthusiast side of these things, as opposed to like the Steam Deck, which I think is targeted towards that more core PC gamer that I was talking about earlier that we've gained this generation.
Yeah. No, I mean, you nailed it. It's like, it is a miniature PC that you can play like Switch in your house. I think that's a good way to look at it more than anything, probably. And then you can dock it and you have like a mini PC that we'll see. I don't know if the dock provides any other benefits. It looks like it's just plugged into a display port, but it's also, I'm looking at a photo where it's hooked up to like another device, which assuming
more
it's just
info on May 11th. I think that's
just like USB connecting things. So my guess is you're not going to get more power with a dock on it. I haven't read on it at all.
Yeah, clarity, but we'll see. I mean,
but it's
could.
Expensive.
And exactly. I mean, PC gaming tends to be when it comes to the high end side of it.
So to cap it off, ultimately, if you're going to sit around your house or maybe bring it with you and be careful with it, it could be really awesome. As long as it feels good and doesn't have like crashing problems. But if you just want to play PC games, then you're going to get way better quality for the price of whatever this is by just buying a PC.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like this is all miniaturized and not going to perform nearly as well for the same price. But of course, you know that.
It's use case stuff. Yeah. I feel like the thing I'm most interested here is the Xbox integration, where them giving the months of Game Pass is huge. And on top of that, it being based on Windows. Like, we keep talking about this, that, like, Game Pass slowly is just kind of infiltrating everybody, where it's like, cool, the focus on the Samsung TV gaming hub stuff, where Xbox Game Pass is just on Samsung TVs, you buy it, and it's just there, and you can pay for it, and then you can just play games.
Yeah.
And guess what? If you're getting the trial on this thing, and it's the more places Xbox Game Pass is and just works and is enticing people that are interested in the hundreds of games from indie all the way up, guess what? Indie games are going to run great on this.
Oh, yeah.
I just think that is the strategy that Xbox has been really kind of betting on, that hopefully is then met with the Starfields and things like that later, where people will be playing Starfield via Game Pass on the Raj Ally later this year. Maybe?
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe, Barrett?
Just put Roger's face on it. That's all I need.
And thanks to chat and a quick look, according to The Verge, the XG Mobile eGPU docking station gives you far more powerful graphics with a single cable. So apparently they also have some additional juice in the dock. Man, this thing is going to be expensive.
That's where tech's at, baby. Like, I think it's interesting that, like, we're just at this point that, like, things that we would want, like, we would want the ability to upgrade things and make them run better when you plug it in, all that stuff. That's PC gaming, baby. But you know what else is a great deal? That's not even a segue. Patreon.com/kindoffunny gets this show ad-free. But for everyone else, guess what? You're in my ad world, baby. Here they are. We're back, everybody. Story number four. Sony's Shuhei Yoshida says AI will change the nature of learning for developers. This comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. SIE's Shuhei Yoshida, aka Shu, has discussed the major impact AI is set to have on game development. In an interview with The Guardian, Yoshida was asked what he thinks about developers' concerns that AI could replace human effort in disciplines like art, music, and coding. Yoshida said developers will need to learn new skills to effectively use AI, which he believes will ultimately have a positive impact on game development. Quote, it's a tool. Someone has to use the tool. AI can produce very strange things, as you must have seen. You really have to be able to use the tool well. AI will change the nature of learning for game developers, but in the end, development will be more efficient and more beautiful things will be made by people. People might not even need to learn programming anymore. If they have learned how to use these tools of the future, the creativity is more important, the direction, how you envision what you want. Yoshida gave The Guardian an example of how AI is being used by smaller teams to help them create projects that might otherwise be out of their capability. Quote, I was going through 15 pitches in a competition for indies in Japan just this morning, and one of them had amazing, beautiful graphics made by a small team of students. They said they used Midjourney, the AI art generator, to create the art. That's powerful. That's a small number of young people that can create an amazing-looking game. In the future, AI could develop interesting animations, behaviors, and even do debugging for your program. The AI conversation continues, Fran. Yeah. Where are you at with all this?
I mean, I agree with Shu's optimism. And what I mean by that is, like, it's early. And yeah, like, we've seen some really amazing stuff from AI. And I think about that a lot now, generating concept art and background. But, like, yeah, it's hard to replace, like, a cohesive vision and creativity for, like, if you look at games like, whether it's Tears of the Kingdom or Elden Ring, or, like, Elden Ring's a very good example where you're like, that is a twisted, crazy fantasy. It's gorgeous. It's wondrous. Could AI come up with all of that in the same way without somebody helping it along? Probably not right now. Yeah. And that's why I'm like, you know, it's amazing to see how much it's progressing. So, like, who's to say in 5-10 years, can we teach AI to be more creative and consistent? And, like, it's already just getting out the gate, you know? So it's definitely scary. Because I think everybody's thinking about that, like, will it be replacing people's their jobs? Like, just think concept artists. Like, we already have stuff like Fiverr, which is a workforce of people that work for much cheaper than hiring people, right? And sometimes people are like, oh, I'll just get an editor on Fiverr. And, like, it's somebody in another part of the world that will work for way cheaper than somewhere else. And now you plug in AI, which is, other than the people, like, running the software, et cetera, it's, like, doesn't charge you. You know, so it's scary in terms of, like, potentially putting people out of work. If it's like, hey, I need concept art for this new thing I'm working on. You could potentially right now or very soon get a pretty good, you know, storyboard out of, like, AI. So, but yeah, I don't think there's any replacement between that and, like, getting to, like, Elden Ring right now. But we'll see in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely a lot to be scared of, and for good reason, when it comes to all this in terms of people's jobs, but also just in terms of, like, the artistry and the control of everything. I do think that at the end of the day, what Shu's saying is right, of it is a tool and it depends on how people are using it. There's so many, for every pro, there's a con, I think, when it comes to the AI stuff. Cause, like, even hear them talking about Midjourney, where it's like, a lot of that stuff is, like, it's taking art that they don't own to then repurpose and turn into something else.
Yeah, it's learned.
But you know what that reminds me of? People doing Let's Plays, and everyone gets upset that Nintendo doesn't allow people to Twitch stream their game. It's a very similar situation. Like, not everything is perfectly ethically correct and all that, but it's the reality we're in. And it comes down to this eventual gut understanding of what's right and what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And people working together to create things. And I think that there's going to have to be standards. And I feel like that is the biggest concern I have, is that this is going to grow and fix itself too quickly for people to be able to stop and be like, what are the rules around this? Like, what are the correct what's the correct kind of moral compass on how we're going to work with this technology that is incredibly helpful? And AI, it's not like it's a new thing. It's been around for a very long time, and so many things that we use every day have been using it. I mean, including video games, right?
Yeah.
So, and your phones and all this stuff, like Google and like the way you search for things and all this, it's like AI is incredibly important. But we need to be able to be in control of that AI.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely occurs to me that, I mean, we're going to be getting to that point of, in the same way where it's like supporting content creators and, you know, folks like that versus, say, the big companies and the corporations. And now you've also got AI in the mix. And in other words, I feel like we almost will be getting to the point you kind of need some disclosure where it's like, wait, how much of this was supported with like real humans versus AI, you know? And like, that's, again, it's a scary world, but like, I think that's going to be really important, is understanding what you're supporting that as this grows, right? Like, it's the same as when you order off of Amazon versus like a mom and pop shop. It's a big decision, actually, because you're going to put the mom and pop shop out of business, and you should think about that stuff. And AI is now going to play.
But having said that, it doesn't make you a bad person for buying on Amazon.
No. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, there is the thing of like, you're right, where it's like, you should support the mom and grop shops where possible, because like they need the help more than Amazon. But there's the convenience of Amazon that people have bought into, and that has all kind of worked into the expectations of things. And so that to me is where it's like, there's so many like laws and or labor issues with Amazon that people talk about all the time. That's the stuff that I think is important, is like exposing where the issues are with the things. And with AI right now, the issues are abundant. They are everywhere, and they are easily pointed out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it may be just be preferential. Like, I guess I think about that a lot more, is like, of course, now being more of a self-authorship, you know, is like people who are out there doing it on their own and as part of like freelancers and artists. And that's what I'm thinking about here, is like, hopefully we're not hearing all of a sudden tons of stories about all these artists that they were freelancers, but now they can't even find work because AI is just, it's easier. You know, it's the Fiverr of that now. But best case scenario, and it's still early on, is like, this will help speed up game development and let them do more things. I mean, that's the way I think everybody probably is looking at it, and hopefully implementing it as part of whatever Epic is doing as part of Unreal and building their AI suite. And that's where you want to see it, like, speed up things, let creative people do even better things versus replace what they're doing.
Yeah.
Give them more time.
Absolutely. And like, the way I see this stuff too is like, I am an optimist when it comes to a lot of the technology stuff, and like, you can disagree with me, but that's fine.
Maybe,
but
I will.
But here with the last statement he said about the small team that was making a pitch and all that stuff, I look at this as like, they're not going to end up making an AI game. I'm looking at this as like, they are now finding talent that have the creative vision, that know how to use these things to do a good pitch, to then be able to create something with potentially PlayStation.
Yeah.
Whether it's on the indie side or not, as Shuhei and that team have proven, they support year after year after year with the PlayStation ecosystem.
Yeah.
Story number 5, Metacritic pledges stricter moderation after Horizon Forbidden West DLC gets review bombed. This comes from Andy Robinson at VGC. Popular review aggregation site Metacritic has pledged to introduce stricter moderation after Sony's Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores DLC was review bombed by users. God, fucking get a life, you fucking losers. Holy shit. The Horizon Forbidden West story expansion was released last week and was widely praised by critics for its story and gameplay additions. However, one plot point appears to have led the game being review bombed on Metacritic, where it currently has a user score of 4 and was as low as 2.7. The plot point seemingly inspired many users to give the game a critical rating on the site. In response to the review bombing, Metacritic and fandom told Eurogamer they're aware of the abusive and disrespectful reviews of Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores and claimed they were currently evolving our processes and tools to introduce stricter moderation in the coming months. No spoilers, by the way. Not going to spoil this for you. Fandom is a place of belonging for all fans, and we take online trust and safety very seriously across all our sites, including Metacritic, the statement reads. Metacritic is aware of the abusive and disrespectful reviews of Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores, and we have a moderation system in place to track violations of our terms of use. Our team reviews each and every report of abuse, including but not limited to racist, sexist, homophobic, insults to others, etc., and if violations occur, the reviews are removed. We're currently evolving our processes and tools to introduce stricter moderation in the coming months.
How did this not happen for Last of Us Part 2? You know?
Did it
not? I feel like that was a huge thing. Like
it did, didn't it?
Probably did.
But apparently not well enough.
But I mean, I think that it did, but then the reviews eventually got deleted. So we don't see it. But I mean, I feel like that was a news story. I mean, I feel like any time there's a woman, pretty much, this ends up happening, which is fucking horrible. And we see this on the movie side as well, like Captain Marvel and all of that. It's like, I mean, yeah, I mean, here, the user score, right? 5.3 on Metacritic for Last of Us Part 2. As everybody can unanimously agree, Last of Us Part 2 is a 5.3 out of 10, right, Fran?
0.8.
Oh, that's an 8?
Yeah.
Damn, that.
Get some glasses.
No, it's not glasses. That is do not put white on fucking yellow.
I mean, I can read it fine.
I mean, yeah. Anyways, glasses. Don't do this shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was like paging through. There's like zeros and ones and fours in the Metacritic. Like, it's so absurd. Like zero? I didn't even know you could give a game a zero. What does that even mean? Like yeah. That's like does not work. That should be the like literally it does. That's a zero. There's no rounding down of like past a one. Anyway, is that real? Am I seeing this right? I didn't know you could give a game a zero because it does not make any sense. So all of y'all that have are on here giving games zeros, you've exposed yourself as an absolute idiot. Like because you can't give a game a zero. I'm sorry. Anyway, Metacritic shouldn't allow that. But anyway, I don't know what they got in a tizzy about. Were you hinting that it might have had something to do with the story?
I don't know. I'm just like, we're not spoiling it.
Okay.
Bless go in and make sure to take out whatever references to whatever it was.
Yeah, but
in here. But again, it's Horizon. It stars a woman. Like, I feel like we don't need to go too much further than that. Spoilers, not spoilers, whatever it is. That is a triggering thing for people for some reason. So
agile babies.
I'm interested in what this is going to result in because it's not like this is the first time this has happened, whether it's on the gaming side of things or on the entertainment side of things. And there's a real question of like what the value is of the user scores on these things. And I understand that there's the demand for it and that people are asking, but it's like, it seems more often than not that the user stuff kind of creates more issues than good when it comes to the review side of things of giving it an actual like the aggregated score side of it, whereas the function of the website is to aggregate the scores of critics, but people want the balance of critics versus users to be able to present both sides of it. But this is what both sides look like.
Well, this is why you don't trust an amalgamation of user reviews, for starters. So it's nice when it lines up and you're like, well, it seems like users agree. But the problem is, like, think of how many of your friends or the friends of your friends who you're like, that was the dumbest take I have heard. And, like, it's just this, like, dishwater. And I'm not hating on a user review. I think they're really important. But what I'm getting at is, like, the gradient of understanding who's, like, a decent take. It's really hard to separate that out. They have like, is this review helpful? But you know, people are saying the zero reviews are helpful. So there's your problem. Idiots helping other idiots. But so be very careful of user reviews. This is like sort of obvious is all I will say. Even I have a problem even with critic reviews in the sense
the whole thing is like, be aware of the context of who the review is. Like
right.
The whole conversation, and this is going off topic just a little bit, but a couple weeks ago when the Mario movie drops and everyone's all up at a tizzy about the critics' reviews versus the user reviews, who gives a shit? Like, the critics reviewed the movie and that's what they thought. They're like, should they like change, like lie and change their opinion about the movie? Like, the people that are not attached to Nintendo or video games or Mario or whatever watch that movie and it didn't resonate with them. That's fine. That's the review that they gave it. And you reading that context, I feel like should be fairly obvious. And when you listen to them talk, when you read their reviews, they kind of make that explicitly clear in the words that are backing up their review.
Yeah.
There's just a validity
that's
sort
of rather important part of it. Yeah. But and I didn't get to finish what I was saying when I said I have a problem with critic reviews. What I mean by that is on Metacritic, it's a boiling down of a ton of reviews. And like, it's built to give you this, like, it's like, you know, a guiding wind, but you're supposed to click on it and see who reviewed what, read what they said, who is the person doing the review, try to get familiar with them. You know, the point is, if you just take Metacritic reviews at that's how you get your reviews, I think you're doing a poor job of getting what might be really important information and takes for you. Like, meaning Metacritic is just like a, you know, it's a guiding hand, you know, wind. So be very careful with any amalgamation of reviews.
Totally. You know? But I see, my thing is, I appreciate it because that's what it is. It is an amalgamation. It is a snapshot. And it is, and my thing is, these are critics that are vetted. These are things that, like, it's not just a bunch of random people. It's like, these are people that are working for sites that are, that have, there's a credibility to it. So there's an expectation that, hey, these people know what they're talking about for whatever reason it is. That's not always going to be the case. That's a problem. That means that somewhere along the line, somebody's not doing their job correctly. But when it comes to the user side of things, there's no rules there. It's just kind of the Wild West. But like, that is something to keep into consideration too, where, again, I do see value in all of it, but I do think that it's just kind of unfortunate that it kind of seems like the aggregate of the critic number represents a bunch of critics' thoughts on this that don't need to reflect yours, don't even need to all be the same, any of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the user side, it can easily be weaponized because there's not that barrier of entry of qualification, whatever that means. So you can kind of like try to like push these weird narratives as opposed to actually reviewing the game. People reviewing games on Metacritic for the critics are verified to have experienced the thing, whereas or at least they should be. Whereas the users are not being verified that they even watched. The people are reviewing game review bombing before the game's even out.
And again, I felt like this should have been fixed with The Last of Us. You know,
straight up, yeah, like that. And so I'm at the end of the day, I'm happy that they're talking about it being a problem. Metacritic themselves acknowledging this and wanting to fix it, I think, is a step beyond the expectation I would have for this. But we'll see how quickly this kind of rolls out, you know, and what it means.
You know what would be a reasonable step forward as a solution? I don't know if it exists at all. I don't think so. But Steam tracks your hours played and is an awesome, awesome thing to do. If you've never done this, you can't do it for Burning Shores, obviously. It's not out on PC yet. But you can go in and filter by people that played it for more than 5 hours, more than 10. And you can literally start to see, like, it goes from the review bombs normally to the people who actually played it. You start to realize it's getting up to the sixes, the sevens, the eights, whatever it actually is. And you realize, yeah, like they haven't even played it. And what I was going to say is, you look at a company like PlayStation in this case. Yeah, why doesn't, if they don't, which I don't think so, but like PlayStation should have official reviews as part of its site and hours played, and you should be able to filter by that. And then Metacritic could use that in an API and actually plug that in and say users who've played more than whatever, even just 3 hours, and they could literally expose that or something. But I mean, honestly, I think stuff like that PlayStation should look into, Xbox should look into,
yeah,
if they haven't.
Yeah, I think it was Daryl in the chat said that critics aren't scientists or something, like their reviews don't matter. The thing is, it's the context. I think context is the most important thing. When when what's up?
No. Well, my dad's a scientist, but critics.
Dr. You're talking about my father, Fran Mirabella II.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Mirabella is a different guy. But no, like, meaning, well, because I consider myself a critic. I assume you do too. I was like, hey. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It's the context. People come to me. I'm not saying that I'm a scientist. I'm not saying that my opinion matters more than you. There's a context of, you understand what I do. You understand my knowledge base. You understand what we do here at Kind of Funny. There's an accountability that we hold each other to. There's an understanding that I'm not going to tell you I did something if I didn't. There's a trust that when I play a game and I give a review, I'm going to tell you how much of it I experienced or didn't experience. Or like when I watch a movie, like the Mario movie, for example, I will give you the caveat of, I loved it because I'm a lifelong Nintendo fan and it meant so much to me. And I saw it 4 times and I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's the context of being a critic and like letting people know what your opinion is and why that matters. When it comes to the user stuff, it's like there's not that context.
Yeah, I'm a lot swirling in my brain there. One is, no, critics, being a critic is not a science and it is not intended to be. And the number, if that's confusing you, it is not about it being a science. There is no right number. And that goes back to what I said, is like, you're supposed to know who did the review, what are the outlet standards, who actually reviewed it though. That's why every time I talk about reviews, I'm like, I don't say GameSpot reviewed it. I say Lucy James reviewed it or whatever, right? Like, I put a name to it, and it's super important. So know who's doing the reviews. But my point is, if you don't need reviews, then yeah, like, you don't need them. They're not for you. You just go and experience things, and if you regret it, and the money doesn't matter to you, then that's cool. Other people are like, I only buy two things a year. I'm kind of wondering, should I wait on this one or not? And that's where it is a super valuable service for tons of people. Ultimately, that's what it's about. It's about saving you time, because time is important to you, and you'd rather go up to Napa if you live around here instead of playing this game because it sucks, or the money part's really important, and you can't afford to like waste your money on a middling product. And so critics are super important in that, but find the good ones, follow the good ones, etc. It's super important. That's why
that's the whole personality thing, and like something that we offer, right? Of like our personal, being able to connect and give our personal things that people can look at and be like, oh, like I connect with like how Tim sees video games. It's all about, finding the people that see art similarly to you. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, when Kevin says something, you're like, oh, I'm the opposite of that for sure. But that's like, because I know him, I'm like, well, that's helpful.
That is helpful.
Kevin loves it. That is exactly my point. Yeah. I'm just kidding, Kevin. Yeah. He's out there.
If Kevin and Fran ever agree on something, finding that out is so far away. Fran, if I want to know what's coming to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
Well, the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. It's Tuesday, so we got a whole bunch of games. We have After Image on everything, Strayed Lights on everything, Roots of Pacha on PC, Trinity Trigger on everything, Stranded Alien Dawn on everything, Fairy Fencer F Refrain Chord on PC, PS4, 5, and Switch, Magical Drop 6 on PC and Switch, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 Future Redeemed DLC coming to Switch. I know a lot of people are excited about that, so enjoy your day with that. Drop System Breach on Switch, and War Mongrels on everything. Deals of the day for you. Immortals Fenyx Rising on Xbox is $9.80 on Amazon, so you can check that out. I missed this. Some new dates. Ghostopia Season 1 launches May 23rd for the Switch, and Star Trek Resurgence launches May 23rd for Xbox One, Xbox Series X, PS4, 5, and PC. Let's do a thing I like to call kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong to see what we got wrong during the show. Oh my lord. Either something is broken, or we just didn't even get a single response today, Fran. Like, I know we didn't get
anything
wrong.
Sounds like something's broken.
Me and you are every perfect.
Time. Yeah, definitely.
10 out of 10. Never fucking forget. That's a Metacritic review for you. That's a critical review, Snowbike Mike.
Yeah, that's right. You're right, one of the user reviews.
We're not one of these fucking users like Kevin Coelho out there. It doesn't even make
that's
sense.
That's right.
But, you know?
Can't trust that guy.
But yeah, nothing. Not even editorializing. So, hey, I appreciate you all. Thank you for keeping us honest by just letting us be honest.
Oh, no, right? Kevin's here.
Uh-oh. Kevin's here.
No, we didn't say anything.
What we want what's something that you and Fran agree on?
We actually agree on a lot. Oh, love chocolate milk.
Love chocolate milk. We've here. Never no, we did it, everyone.
But he's right. I do love chocolate milk. But what kind of chocolate milk, Kevin?
Strauss chocolate milk, everybody.
Sounds good.
Get on it. So we're about to wrap up the show right now, but I wanted to let you know that tomorrow's hosts are Blessing and me, and then Thursday, Blessing and WWE superstar Austin Creed is going to be here hosting Games Daily, then KFW, then the Greg Miller 40th birthday, birthday stream. It's going to much fun. We're all hanging out here. Austin will be hanging out with us. I can't wait to see him, and I can't wait to celebrate Big Daddy Greg Miller for his 40th birthday. 40.
Dang, his birthday's this Friday, basically?
It is.
Wow.
Yeah. Thursday. Yeah.
I gotta play Star Wars. Sorry. I get it.
It's
I can't make
thing.
It. I'm just...
And Greg Miller's birthday, April 27th, Snowbike Mike. Never forget this. It's also my dog Moose's third birthday.
Oh, all right. Yes.
Pompele Moose. Third birthday, April 27th. And then Friday, it'll be me and Bless as well. So it's going to be a great week. So much fun stuff. But remember, if you're watching live, we're trying something new. We're doing a little post-show to Games Daily to segue into the daily streams. We'll be answering all of your YouTube super chats. Snowbike Mike's going to join us, get the energy going. If you have questions about video games, if you have questions for Fran, I always love when we have special guests here because you get to kind of get some more very specific.
Destiny comment.
If you want Destiny, if you want some hair tips, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Fran's here. here. Ask the questions. We will answer them. But this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on YouTube.com/KindofFunnyGames and Twitch.tv/KindofFunnyGames. We come at you with all the video game news that you need to know. But until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.